It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve. Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Axis of Easy podcast, Compendium, the sidekick. Is Compendium the right word for what this is? Do you know?
I have no clue.
That other voice you hear is Len. I'm Joey, and we're the Canadian Bitcoiners, and we're doing Axis of Easy on behalf of EasyDNS. You can subscribe to Axis of Easy anywhere you get your podcasts, including Fountain, a favorite of Bitcoiners, obviously a favorite platform of Bitcoiners on Android or iOS. And you can go to accessofeasy.com and sign up for the weekly email version. Len. Last week's quote, okay, the quote of the week last week, of all tyrannies, a tyranny sincerely exercised for the good of its victims may be the most oppressive. That's by C.S. Lewis. Did C.S. Lewis write the Narnia books? He did, right?
I never read them, so I don't know. I don't follow that series, so I don't know.
Shame on you. Shame on you. Yeah. I think he did. He also wrote a bunch of other philosophical leaning texts. Anyways, story for another podcast that we haven't started yet, I guess. We're not going to start another one.
Jeez, we're already kind of.
No more days here. The winner was James, whose last name I won't say on air. Good job, James. And Mark notes that he misread a timestamp. So it was two errors this week. Sam, also a winner. Congrats to you both. I think you get your domain renewal on the house, which is dope. So this week's quote. Good people do not need laws to tell them to act responsibly, while bad people find a way around the laws. Interesting. True or not true? What do you think?
Well, given what's going on in the state of the world and maybe what's happening more closer to home, perhaps maybe that's true. Maybe not. I do not know. Don't want to say anything with having my bank account frozen. So
very non-committal. Yeah, absolutely ideal there for you.
I'm just looking at the lay of the land and what's going on and who's being thrown under the bus and this is all, you know, hypothetical. I'm giving no specifics, no names being thrown. So it's hard to say exactly who I'm talking about or what I'm talking about. But there's, yeah, very interesting times.
So if you know the person who said that quote, put it in the comments. No looking up, no Googling, none of that stuff. Definitely want to see if we can get another winner. I think this is like the third week in a row we've had a winner without having any hiccups, right? There was a few weeks there at the beginning where there was a little bit of trouble. Yeah. So anyway, Len. If I was leaking, like people's data was leaking, I would go see my doctor. Okay. We got a lot to talk about today. What are we thinking? Where do you want to start?
Let's talk about, security researchers at Verity, they have introduced me to a brand new term I've never heard before. Malware as a service, MaaS. Thank you for providing this to me. I didn't have enough terms to think about. And it looks like people are taking advantage of AI projects like ChatGPT or Google's Bard, and it's a way to help distribute a strain of malware known as Red Lion Stealer. And according to what I found on Google, Red Lion Stealer is a malicious program which can be purchased on hacker forums for between $150 and $200, depending on the version. So they must have a pro version of this malware for very cool stuff. It could be used to steal information and infect operating systems with other malware. And a short list of the info that it can steal include grabbing cookies, autofill, credit card, logins, passwords from browsers, extracting VPN credentials, including NordVPN, OpenVPN, and ProtonVPN, and extracting Steam, Discord, and Telegram data. This is pretty nasty stuff. So how do projects like ChatGPT fit into this story? Well, malicious actors have been spreaded posts on platforms like Facebook, which promoted free downloads of alleged programs that are ChatGPT or Google Bard related files. And embedded in these files is the Red Lion Stealer MaaS. And once the user opens the file, the information is then extracted, and then you are off to the races. Incredibly, people are still falling for this, these very simple tricks in 2023. And it's not like the internet became mainstream just last year. And how awful are the privacy tactics people are employing when using the internet? And people are easily lured when they're looking at the words AI. It's the latest buzzword that could get people clicking away on stuff without any thinking. They could just click away and they're going to get potentially ChatGPT or Google Bard on their system no bloody way. These are big, heavy duty programs that are hosted off stream, offline on some other computer. There's no way you could download a version of that on your computer. It's always going to be an interaction through the internet to use these things. So don't be lured by any of this, man. Just practice some good privacy hygiene when you're using the internet. Don't fall for any crap. It's easier said than done. But again, we've been at this for a very long time. The internet's decades old. Smarten up, people. Smarten up.
I want to know the I'm not a big fan of, you know, broad stroke laws and requirements for internet traffic, and certainly not for websites who want to sell you something or, you know, grab data from you as a way of monetizing. I think there's a place for that, although there's got to be some permissions given. But one thing I think we've talked about a lot is, and this is, you know, much different than last week's episode where we talked about an iPhone zero touch exploit, right? Where without access to your phone, without doing anything specific, your data was able to be compromised by the right person. This is something that people are doing unknowingly. They're downloading a file, or they're clicking a link, or they're doing, you know, it's not easy to do that. But I will come to the defense of especially older people. I think, Len, I'm a guy who likes to watch basketball, and up until this weekend, I didn't have the channels to watch all the playoff basketball games I wanted. And so you could catch me on different, you know, gray market streaming websites. And the number of things you have to avoid clicking that look like they should be clicked on the way to streaming a game is unbelievable. It's constant pop-ups. This is the game stream. This is the game stream. Click here to start your stream. Click here to download software for the stream. They're all over the place. And I think that there should be, you know, maybe not a hard and fast rule, but some widely accepted thing on hosting platforms says, if you do this, you're out. We're not going to keep you around. This is malicious behavior. And I hate to see stuff like this, because this seems to me, like you mentioned, it's hard to do this by accident, or on purpose, I should say. And so I would imagine people are really doing this by accident, maybe don't know any better. And to me, that sort of screams at the older crowd. And I don't like that at all.
Yeah. Yeah, the lesson here is just don't click away on stuff that you just don't know what it is, and also don't watch NBA playoffs online. Let's move on. Let's talk about Salesforce Community, and this is a cloud-based software program, and the cost to get access to this program is not cheap. It's starting around $250 a month, so that's a pretty hefty price. And with this software, it comes with the ability to create websites with very little fuss. With six clicks and filling out just three fields, you could create a very snappy looking website. But not mentioned by the Salesforce community is that there was a configuration error that allowed for unauthorized users to view sensitive information that should only be accessible after logging in. And I wonder if there's a deluxe package offered by the Salesforce community to close this loophole. Sadly, the breach impacted customers, including banks and medical firms. So who knows how much sensitive information or what sensitive information was exposed. And this isn't Salesforce community's first kick at the can when dealing with fumbling the ball. The chief security officer for Vermont, Scott Carby, has done his homework and discovered that a state run Salesforce site was incorrectly configured to permit visitor access to sensitive data. Even DC healthcare websites were exposing private data thanks to Salesforce Touch, where no data shall be deemed safe or secure. And it makes me wonder how many of these government departments are using the quick method to creating websites. Don't they have their own internal teams that could create this with the same little effort and create something that is equally as snappy, maybe even outsource it to India? I don't know. I'm just giving some options here. But anyways, don't rely on these quick and easy methods to do it. Do it yourself, or you know what? Engage EasyDNS. That may be the easier way and a safer way of doing it.
Engaging DNS is EasyDNS is almost always a good idea. I have found in our short time working with them. So that's been good. I want to point you to one thing here, okay? I feel like I'm playing devil's advocate today, which I never do. I always attack these companies, or always attack the users, I should say. But this time, I think I'm going to go for the company a little bit. And I don't know if you read the comments on this story, but I was reading them earlier, and there's one comment here that caught my attention. As someone who has used or mucked around a little bit with AWS, okay, this sounds true to me. This comment is from a guy named NW. I don't know what that is or who that is. It sounds like Salesforce has the same security strategy as AWS. Market their products claiming that they'll handle and be responsible for security issues that don't result from, quote, user misconfiguration, and then define configuration such that it covers basically the entire attack surface and make correct configuration so unlikely when performed by mere mortals that only an idiot would ever bother to hit the parts the company is legally responsible for. What a business model. That's interesting. It does make sense from the business point of view to push as much culpability onto the user as you can, especially when it comes to something like website building or a cloud computing service. So I would not be surprised if this was the case. I'm not familiar with Salesforce, really. I don't use any of their products as far as I know, except Slack. And that's obviously a recent-ish acquisition by CRM. So overall, I still think there's a role for, like you mentioned, major organizations, governments, et cetera. They should be doing this stuff on their own if they can. And bringing this kind of talent in-house, it seems to me, has become easier and easier, right? Building websites has become easier and sort of programmable, as you're seeing here, but it's still being done outside the confines of these offices and these working teams. So interesting stuff. Have you used AWS before? Do you know how that kind of, how open and free it is in there? You can basically do whatever you want. It seems to me like if there was ever a problem with something you put together, Amazon wouldn't take responsibility for your configuration woes.
Yeah, I tried it a long time ago. There was a Linux, I forget what it was. It's just like a Linux virtual machine that you could use. And I tried it, but that was a few years ago. I never went very far into it. So yeah, it seemed interesting, but I'm not going to touch it anymore. It's for other people, for other projects, not for me. All right, let's move on. Got an interesting story. Paul Thacker, the former lead investigator to Senator Chuck Grassley, has published an article this past week in the Disinformation Chronicle. The article goes on to talk about how media is a very powerful tool for formulating a narrative. The title of the article is Twitter Files, Who for the World Health Organization Censored Itself on Vaccines to Help Twitter Censor Tucker Carlson. This is actually very interesting given what happened in the past.
This is a crazy story.
So Thacker has come to the conclusion that Tucker was the victim of an organized attack to publicly discredit him. And this is the result of Tucker's brand of no holds barred style of journalism, where he challenged the World Health Organization for doing a 180 and withdrawing the advice that younger children should get vaccinated. And the image portrayed of Tucker was in a very bad light, and it was perpetrated by mainstream media. And the article claimed that the World Health Organization edited their COVID vaccine page that removed the language which Tucker pointed out on his very own program. And Twitter, this was of course pre-Elon, was mulling over how they could keep things under wraps before it created what they deemed as a, quote, political risk. And obviously, the mainstream media has a lot of power, but it seems to be dwindling. Now, with Tucker leaving Fox, it seems that network news is going to be losing a lot of viewers as a whole. He seems to be the catalyst for dragging in a lot of eyeballs to network news. But not only that, a lot of people have been losing trust, or they have now distrust, with mainstream media. So this seems to be a story that worked very well in the old days, but I'm fairly certain that the amount of power that mainstream media has been lost, a lot of that has been lost over the past little while. People are very distrustful of what's going on. So it's good to see that this was brought to light, but it's just the sun is setting on mainstream media. That's my opinion.
I think that's true. This storyline is completely insane, that he writes an op-ed and does a segment on his show pointing out that the WHO changed the recommendation for kids. I don't know exactly how kids was qualified here, but to not get the vaccine. The WHO does a 180 end around, triple reverse, and edits their page to make Tucker look like he's making stuff up. This is a family show. And then they try and have him removed from the platform via communications with Twitter staff that was outed in the Twitter files. Like, the vaccine thing is so hot button, and so I don't want to talk about it too much, but I'll just say one thing here, okay? I already told you my stance on this. This is completely insane. No one should trust any of these organizations at all with anything, okay? If they can do this, they can do it other times too when people are not paying this much attention. But I will note that another key definition or term that was changed was the was vaccination, and I think herd immunity as well were changed on the WHO website, and maybe also Wikipedia and some other kind of, you know, there's a kinder word for this that doesn't have as much stigma, but I'm going to use this one anyway. Other sort of globalist platforms and organizations. And it's clear to me that there was an attempt here to villainize anyone who was against not just the vaccine, but the vaccination campaigns. And this is really sad to see, regardless of your view on COVID, vaccines, lockdowns, all those things that have divided friends and families, you know, for the last 3 years. You have to agree that this is not good. This goes as well, Len, to the information we were talking about last week about the overarching body that runs the .com, .net domain names, the suffixes. I don't know the terminology off the top of my head, but
I can't, you know, think it is.
Maybe. All this stuff together, like, does this not worry people? I guess no one just notices this. Like, everyone's kind of just sleepwalking through life and trying to make sure there's food on the table and that their kids can go to school or whatever. But this is scary stuff. All this together is a cocktail for pushing narratives that are just simply not true and villainizing, you know, perhaps persecuting and deplatforming and removing from their earnings people who disagree. It's insane, I think, more than anything else.
Let's talk about more insanity, because somebody looks like they pulled a Ferris Bueller and they hacked into their school earlier this year. Actually, it wasn't just one school. It was a bunch of schools. Minneapolis Public Schools. I'm not sure how many that comprises of.
A bunch.
More than one. Well, this breach resulted in quite a bit of sensitive information that was stolen, including, get this, children's contact details, abuse by teachers' social security numbers, and more. NBC News was able to look at this. They downloaded and reviewed more than 500 of these documents. So no doubt this is being stored on their database to be reviewed at a later date once these children become older and potentially start maybe doing a political career and they could use
it. Interrupt you here? Don't forget that our Lord and Savior Chris Cuomo reminds us that only the media can download and look through leaked documents, but you and me, we are not allowed. So thank you, MSNBC, for this important work.
they have carte blanche. But this 500 documents they size only just as scratching the surface, because the total number of files stolen was around 200,000 in range. And the ransomware group is posting some of these documents, and they did so on Twitter and Facebook, just to show that they mean business. And if you're one of the impacted individuals or parents of one of those that were impacted, worry not, because the public school over there, the schools over there, they have provided a statement to state that, quote, external specialist and law enforcement to review the data. They're taking care of this. So essentially they're reviewing it and they're going to be ensuring that your data is safe and secure. Yeah.
Good.
Bloody likely. I basically have as much confidence leaving my money in one of the regional banks in the U.S. and having these guys secure the data right now. But anyways, this isn't the first instance that a school information was stolen in the U.S. In fact, in the past 2 years, there's been 122 school districts that have been affected by ransomware. 122 in 2 years. That's a pretty crappy record, 10 a month. This is more commonplace as, you know, more and more people have their sensitive information online, and it's going to be easy target for a lot of this, because this sensitive information then becomes valuable information. And with all our information getting digitized, and it's been doing so for quite some time, we basically have a generation's worth of data that is available for anybody to get their hands on should they crack the code and gain access. So expect to see more of this on the rise, and a lot more people are going to be trying to get access to all this information. So the people holding on to it need to practice better security measures. And what that may be, well, they're going to have to figure this out, because it's not my job to tell them. But I know if my information is being stored over in any place, I want it done securely. And these people over there in these school boards, they've been doing a bad job at it.
I mean, honeypots exist in all levels of kind of large collaborative. Again, like, I'm trying not to continue just to say government, but government sucks at honeypots. They do. whether it's schools or secret files at, you know, higher levels, they suck at keeping this stuff private. It's been documented many times. And also, they're the easiest target. You're guaranteed to find something juicy if you go after a school database, 100%. Anyone who's worked with kids or has worked in a school or has been around teachers will tell you that. And whether that's good or bad is a story for another time. You know, Len, the other thing that's interesting here, NBC News was able to view the leaked files after downloading them from links posted to the hacker group's Telegram account. So on the privacy side, okay, the honeypot, no good for sure. But it's interesting. Let's say they can't catch the perpetrator here, right? You mentioned there's been 120 of these incidences, you know, give or take a few over the last 12 months. So the clip about 10 a month, if you average it out, how many of those stories have been closed with, you know, the perpetrator was found, captured, interrogated, fined, put in jail? As far as I know, none. And so it's not like the privacy practices aren't available, right? You look at Telegram. Telegram is a great example. I think you can use Telegram without a phone number. You just throw a NIM username on there, burner email, whatever. Like, there's nothing they can do. So one thing here that I will note, maybe the wrong time to align with this sort of ransomware stuff, but kudos to Telegram for their platform, right? It's impossible, it seems like, to pin these guys down. NBC can join the group and download the files, but they can't get the guy who is doing the hacking, right? The data breaching. So that's interesting. And I was just, you know, Len, when it comes to hacking, you know, for the people out there who are thinking about doing stuff like this, not that there's many listening to this show, so maybe just, you know, kind of yelling into the wind here, but, you know, why kids? You don't need to hack kids, and schools don't need to keep all kinds of data on kids. You know, kids change the way they think, the way they feel, the things they say, the things they do, literally day to day. You know this, you have a little one. I've worked around kids for a long time. I know this as well. There is no valuable data basically for a kid, you know, day to day, year to year. Keep the grades, and that's all you need. This other stuff, you know, short of administrative issues with abuse, it just doesn't need to be kept. Period, end of story. It's not useful. It's never proven to be useful anywhere.
Not until they have political aspirations, then you could use ransomware in the future.
Got to fill that closet with skeletons somehow, right?
So let's move on. A Chinese APT, or Advanced Persistent Threat, has been targeting individuals in China and Nigeria. And the goal of this APT is to steal passwords and data. And this was done over the course of a period of 2 years. And I'm wondering if that Nigerian prince that you were talked about in the last show, he's now on the map to get hacked, because who knows, maybe they want to get him.
We're getting a lot of feedback on the Nigerian prince comps, by the way, on this show and on TV. It's a favorite.
Oh, as we should. It's a good stuff. Anyways, the Evasive Panda APT. Man, could they not have picked a better name, Invasive Panda? I mean, they could have gone with perfectly legitimate panda software. I don't know. Something that could just slide under. Anyways, it was noted by researchers when performing an update on software on infected computers that part of the update process included downloading MGBot backdoor installers from legitimate URLs and IP addresses. And the MGBot backdoor allowed the Evasive Panda to start spying on individuals. No doubt the victims were targeted for a reason, but I do not know why, but I would imagine they do know why they're targeting these specific people. But one thing is for certain, China is going to stop at nothing to crush its competition and even people out there that is stopping them from achieving their goal. They'll bulldoze anybody over their path, be it friend or foe, or as we say on our show, Joey, it's either friends or enemies. So watch out for what's going on with China. Why they're going after Nigerian people as well, I don't know, but there seems to be something here I want to look into a little bit more, because this seems to be a very interesting story.
Dude, they haven't been able to figure out how they did this. Like, this sort of man in the middle attacks, like, it's, and the IPs are friendly, the websites are friendly. So Kapersky researchers, last paragraph here, yeah, I think it's the last paragraph, yeah. Kapersky researchers advise that the only way for potential targets to defend against such attacks is to remain extremely vigilant and put in place robust security procedures that involve antivirus scans, analysis of outbound network traffic, and extensive logging. So they can't even stop the attack on their end, is basically what you're saying? Like, the companies who are being targeted and having their software compromised can't do anything about this? It falls on the user? That's bad. Because if you go on YouTube and look at, like, some of these antivirus reviews, Kapersky and NOD32 from ESET among them, which are, like, highly regarded as quality retail-facing products for antivirus and you know, general computer protection, they're not that great. These guys on YouTube have stuff on their computer, and they're just streaming on OBS, you know, showing that they can get through this stuff with basically no questions asked by the program. So, dicey, man. I don't know. Like, what are you supposed to do? Like, what is the plan here? Just shut it off, man. Just shut it off.
Yeah. Don't turn it on until 2030 and hope for the best. Yeah. Live like caveman. You'll be good to go.
Shut it off. Return to tradition. Reject modernity. Okay. I think that's the last story. Is that it?
That is it.
That's it. God bless everyone. Thanks for coming. That was episode 296. We'll be back next week with more. heat in the security tech and privacy world. Until then, take care of yourselves.
Yeah, take care.